Hey, Startup Hustle listeners, before we get into today's episode, I've got some exciting news to share. If you've enjoyed the insights and stories here at Startup Hustle, you're going to love what we have in store at our brand new podcast called Product Driven. I've always described myself as a product guy first, entrepreneur, software engineer, but really a product guy. I love building products. Many people struggle, though, with how to take a product idea and build a tech product, while software engineers struggle to understand the business side of things and they just don't see the big picture. My new podcast, Product Driven, is about that gap between business and the tech side of building software. It's designed for startup founders, tech leaders, software engineers, and anyone who loves tech and startups. Thank you for being part of this community. Enjoy this episode of Startup Hustle, and please subscribe to Product Driven in your podcast app, and you can also check it out on YouTube. Thank you so much.
And we're back for another episode of Startup Hustle, a podcast for entrepreneurs by entrepreneurs. If you want to start, own, or build a business, then you're in the right place. We bring you the real truth about what it's like to take something from concept to launch. From growth, innovation, experience, failing, or winning big, we've got you covered. So let's get down to business with another episode of Startup Hustle, brought to you by Fullscale.io.
What's up, hustlers? Welcome back. This is Andrew Morgans, founder of Marknology, here as today's host of Startup Hustle. Today, we're going to be talking about simplifying your company's message. And before I introduce today's guest, today's episode of Startup Hustle is powered by Fullscale.io. Hiring software developers is difficult. Fullscale can help you build a software team quickly and affordably and has the platform to help you manage that team. Visit Fullscale.io to learn more. Kelly Thornton, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me. Let's rock.
Yeah, guys, we were just chatting, before we got on the show, and we really have a lot in common. I love when I get brand owners, people that have built a brand on the show instead of just service providers. It's just kind of a different take, a different look at e-commerce and what we're doing. So I'm really excited to have you on here and hopefully share some of your story with us. One, where are you calling in from?
Chicago.
I love it. Another Midwesterner, if you guys consider yourselves Midwest. I do.
You know, I'm born and raised on the East Coast. We were kind of talking a little East Coast a minute ago, but I've been in Chicago for over 30 years, and it's great. It's a great city. It has great people here. Midwestern attitude. People are still, you know, very friendly, still saying hi to each other for the most part on the street. And it's great. I do like the East Coast, love the East Coast, love the West Coast, but Chicago is a great home.
Yeah, I can't disagree. Being in Kansas City, we're like the little brother of Chicago, if anything. Yeah. But there's a few cities in the Midwest that have any size. So, you know, we're not really looking to New York. We're looking to Chicago as far as calling it the big city. And when it comes to e-commerce, at least Chicago seems to have, like, you know, that's the city to go to for events and things like that. So, absolutely love Chicago. Hopefully you're getting the same weather we're getting today here in Kansas City.
Thanks. You know, we're getting into the cloudy season. I don't care about the cold, but man, the dark skies get a little gloomy.
Like, where's my sunshine, right?
We'll be good.
Well, I love getting the show started, just getting to know Kelly a little bit better. Like, you know, I know you've been doing this for about 8 years as far as building this brand, but I'm sure your story starts before that. Did you always know you're going to be an entrepreneur, a business owner? You know, how did you get into to skincare?
Yeah, I got into skincare because I'm starting to look like shit. I'm getting older, looking at the self, and I'm wondering what my wife sees in me still. But I really did want to start thinking about taking care of myself differently. You have, you know, you're talking about skincare earlier, and you have like a specific skincare need that you're trying to address. And I think it's the same thing for me. It started off like understanding anti-aging. But there's a bigger thing going on around self-care that's generally speaking, we're more aware of all this stuff, right? We speak men over here because we do sell to men's. T. Chanley is a men's skincare brand. But it is about like healthy lifestyle, healthy routine, eating right, sleeping right, drinking enough water, you know, going to the doctors regularly. And we're just part of a healthy routine that's about taking care of your skin. So, you know, I mean, that's generally how we got started, is my interest in, you know, trying to help guys think about skincare and the importance of it in their healthy journey and my personal healthy journey. On the entrepreneur stuff, yeah, I mean, I was hardwired early on to be an entrepreneur. It took me a long time. I started a business in high school and college. I was very fortunate. It was really a necessity to pay my bills. And then I went corporate for 18 years. Then I started my second company, and Tiege Hanley is my third business.
Okay, hold on a second. You said you went corporate for 18 years
after your first
venture?
Yep.
Okay, so let's talk through that just a second. Okay, yeah. So first venture was?
You know, it was in New England. I had a painting business.
Okay.
And it was just service business. I want to tell you something, Andrew. I've never mentioned anybody on any podcast that I've been on, but I like just went to every parking lot in town, and particularly all the church parking lots and other all over New England, all types of churches from all walks of life. And I was putting flyers, and I was busy for 4 years, Christmas, spring break, and all summer, and had, you know, a team of four or five people painting. And it was a wonderful time to be outside in the summer and spending time with friends and doing some pretty good work and charging, you know, under market and being able to graduate college debt free.
That's
and,
incredible.
You know, having enough money to buy a car coming out of college. So it was a fantastic experience. I really loved it a lot.
Well, thank you for sharing that. I like the good stuff. Okay. That's the good stuff I'm talking about, Kelly.
Yeah.
You got a taste for it. You got a taste for being like, I can go get my own business, right? Maybe parking lots wouldn't have lasted forever, but they worked for a long time. You stay busy for 4 years.
That's right.
I started school in Hawaii, and we did power washing and painting there. I worked with a small crew. First it was landscaping, then I moved into painting. And when I moved from Hawaii back to Kansas City, I joined CertaPro. They're like a franchise for painting.
Yeah.
And doing my first job. So I went from painting like walls and houses. The first job, I was just like signed up. Okay, got a job. Great. And they had me on a 3-story Holiday Inn Express, like on a 40-foot ladder. I was barely big enough to move that thing. They definitely don't want you to pull it down and put it back up, right? Wasted time. So I'm gimbling it over there, scared to death of heights. And I just never had to deal with heights when I was painting before. It was smaller stuff. So that crew really pushed my limits. But again, I was working my way through college, wasn't running a crew, was part of a crew in that regard. So I wasn't an entrepreneur. But I really look back on a lot of those labor service type jobs that I had. And I feel like I gained a lot of experience. I learned a lot. So talk to me about corporate. The next 18 years you're in corporate, you're at one company or you're jumping around?
Yeah, I was at one company. I mean, I just rode that wave. I was in sales the whole time. And I knew graduating college, I interviewed for all these sales jobs, and I ended up actually taking a job where I was going to work in Boston. And I was like a month between graduating and starting my career. And my father said, hey, you know, you never interviewed and like asked about working in the industry that he was in, which was in this packaging in-store display industry in New York. And I said, you know, I didn't think of it. They offered me $10,000 more. I think my first job was like $18,500 plus I might make like $1,000 in commission. And they offered me like a $28,000 job. This is, you know, 1990, with a car, and like in 6 months I was going to make commission. I'm like, I'll take that job, you know?
Yeah.
And I just stuck with it for a long time. It was very fortunate because I did, you know, people were being paid a lot of money in commission back then and I'm sure those jobs are still out there today. If you look hard enough for them, but, it was a great, you know, it was a really dog eat dog, survival of the fittest, you know, tough customers, grind, eat what you kill type of job. And I was on it for 18 years, but I learned every aspect. Anybody that's out there in any type of sales job really learns broadly about like their organization, right? Because they really need to. They need to understand the technical aspects of the products they're selling. They need to understand if they're shipping, if they're producing a product, they need to understand manufacturing, shipping, you know, distribution, all of this stuff. So I felt like that was a pretty good foundation. And then I was able to lead people and develop a team, you know, over years, train people. So I think all that stuff was really helpful. Getting out of it was very hard. It was kind of like, you know,
the only thing you knew at that point, with alcohol, you know, for a long
time. AA to become back to be an entrepreneur. It was very sobering.
Yeah, I bet. There's a lot about sales that feels very entrepreneurial to me.
Yeah.
Even if you're part of a company, because a lot of times you're having to go out there and get your own business. Like not every company, at least in sales, is giving you leads and all that. A lot of it is like, you know, you're going out there and figuring it out yourself. I was a bartender a long time, you know, worked 6 or 7 years while going through school and playing music. I worked at a retail store, you know, selling stuff. The kind where you have to address everyone when they come in, you know, you got to be selling in that way. And there's something that just kind of, you can kind of put on this mask and go to work. Like, you know, the mask just being like, you got to be in sell mode. I'm not in sell mode when I'm not doing that. You know, I'm not trying to push people to buy things or whatever. So it's like this mode that you get into. And I think that now we're in e-commerce, a lot of those skills translate in regards to like the feeling, the approach, you know, just the way you're doing it, the strategy or the methodology is different. But I think it's great training for anyone trying to be an entrepreneur, get into entrepreneurship, to just, you need to know how to sell at some level, whether you're upselling the onion ring or you're upselling the purchase, right? Or you're creating relationships. I think that's a big part of my success has been kind of the relationship building part of sales. And then able to leverage those relationships to grow the business, you know?
We
have one of those, companies here in Kansas City as well. I think it's called American Box, just to give them a shout out. I've been there, toured their facility because I like to know who's in town, who's doing what, if someone's trying to get some packaging done, where do I send them, you know, that kind of thing. And their main focus was kind of like displays. And so they have a very robust facility that I was just blown away by. You didn't know cardboard could do that many things. But it was cool. It was really cool getting to see a tour from inside a big one really operating, like, you know, at full speed and all the different things they're doing. They had some like Star Wars type stuff in there. But so 18 years in, really cutting it off whenever you went back to entrepreneurship.
Yeah.
Was that jump into what you're doing now, or was there something in between?
I had an agency for about 8 or 9 years. So I had a global design agency. With that, that business was designing, producing, co-packing and shipping point of purchase displays, temporary corrugated and metal and permanent wire and plastic. I liked the creative side of it. I liked the strategy side. So we started just doing design and strategy work and research for big global CPG companies. It was awesome. We worked all around the world. Most of our business was actually overseas with big global CPGs that want to develop an in-store strategy. And actually a lot of that thought process really parlayed well into DTC, because it's like what you're doing in that world is you're thinking about how people are shopping in different stores throughout, you know,
their
throughout
journey,
the US,
their customer
throughout
journey
the world.
Or whatever. Right.
It's totally different. I mean, most consumers don't realize it, but they make subconscious decisions about where they go to shop based on like their mental need space at the time. Sometimes you're feeling like, hey, you know, I want to go to a larger store, like whatever, like a Macy's or a Nordstrom, because you want to explore stuff. And other times you're like, I just need to get in and out of there. Like it's just milk that I need. So I'm going to like your local convenience store. Other times it's like, I might need milk plus this. So I'm going to a grocery store. So you really be like kind of pre-select and you're in a mental state about what you want to buy. And a lot of that translates into like the digital world, right? Because people are shopping in different channels. So you and I were talking about Amazon. You know, there's a very specific, you know, kind of shopper need state when they go to Amazon. Although we know Amazon's like a lot of search now too, right? I mean, massive search on Amazon. But most people are going there to buy. And if they're coming to r.com, they might be coming to learn about our products. They might want to understand what makes our skincare unique or look at the science of it and that type of thing. So there's a lot of correlation between this. And then each channel that we operate in, whether or not it's a micro influencer or macro influencer or long form content, short form content, SEO, this is all like thinking about how the shopper or the consumer is digesting information about our company on their path to purchase.
Yeah. Are we educating? Are we comparing? Are we, right. you know, building trust? Like, yeah. you know, what is our, are we trying to, you know, as an agency, I'm always thinking about, well, am I trying to recruit employees? Right. Like, it's not just clients that I'm trying to put out content for. I want to be seen as a, you know, a thought leader, as a team doing a lot of innovative stuff. Some of the content we do is to recruit. You know, most people don't see that. They think that it's just for getting customers or sales, you know, but no, there's a lot of stuff you're doing that doesn't necessarily have an ROI to a sale point. I think about retail stores and how they have, you know, color schemes and the music they're playing and the temperature they keep the place in. And, you know, the really good ones are thinking through all those things. There's like a energy you get in a store when it's got, you know, like house music on, and it's got like, you know, colors that make you say yes or buy. And then there's colors that make you kind of like move quick. They got all different kinds of methodologies. Like I think of IKEA, you know, where they're, I hated it. We have Nebraska Furniture Mart here and we have IKEA, and I like the stuff in IKEA other than having to build it. I like the very simplistic design. I grew up overseas abroad. I like some minimalism and simplistic stuff, but you couldn't hardly drag me into it in IKEA at a certain point. I hated that they were choosing what I looked at, that I had to look through everything. It was like a rat maze versus Nebraska Furniture Mart was wide open. Okay. And you could just go any department you want. They're both massive furniture stores, is why I'm kind of bringing them up. And I think about in the D2C model, you're exactly right. There are like those there's those sales funnels that are just like hitting you with all the upsells and the cross sells, and they're making you go through these funnels. And we do it, you know, all of us have done some of those at some point. And then there's the one click buys. So there's the ones that are like trying to upsell you. And then there's the one that's just like, I want to make it easy, come in and shop. Something I've really learned on the Amazon side is you're talking about this like mindset people are in, and Amazon is direct response. You know, it's like they're typing in, cooking pan and like buying a cooking pan or looking at them at least, right? Or there's now some people looking at the different brands and doing some shopping like that. But in general, it's like they're not like trying to research what are the top 10 cooking pans and read about them. They are like looking to buy.
They're ready to buy.
Yeah. And there's some products that are what I would consider like auxiliary, or, you know, it's not a product you would go to the store to buy. But if you're in the store, you might buy it. If that makes sense. Like it's not, I wouldn't go straight to the store to get a blender bottle for the gym, but I might go to get pre-workout and protein. And then I might also buy a blender.
Right.
Bottle.
That's the reason why all those upsells and recommended buy with buttons on Amazon are so important to their ecosystem. And exactly. The take rates on those are huge.
I've tried through the years, I've been doing this 12 years, I've tried sending people just to a website to, let's say, buy a blender bottle, just as this example. And you struggle and you just can't get the D2C model to work, and you can't understand why people, you know, aren't buying from your site. Why aren't Facebook ads working? Why aren't Google ads working? Why aren't TikTok? Well, because no one goes to a store just to buy a blender bottle, or at least like you got to convince somebody to do it. It is rare,
right?
Versus, this is a thing that everyone goes to the store to buy, you know, protein, you know, they want to see it. They want to read the label. They want to ask the guy at the shop, hey, this is my height, my size, kind of the diet I'm on. What do you recommend? You know, you can't get that on the web really. So you would go in store to get that and kind of get that vitamin, that GNC guy to kind of tell you what you need. And then you grab a blender bottle on the way out. And I think that thinking about it in that way, that retail way, and really learning about those kinds of things and customer behavior and what they're thinking really does translate to D2C and e-com. Every channel just has its own little nuance, I guess, in that way. And, you know, understanding your guys' brand, I've looked at it and understand it very much educational. Right. It's, you know, it's educating men, I feel like, in a lot of ways. Okay, so you had 8 or 9 years, had an agency.
Yep.
Was there an exit there? Was there just kind of a closing the doors? Was it a, I just want to switch things up? Like,
yeah,
what's
kind of funny
there?
Story. I mean, I was overlapping with Tiege Hanley. I kind of started it as a side hustle. And you know, there was a college roommate of mine, I met in high school, went into college with him. And he was very fortunate. He had just kind of a small exit from a software company in Connecticut that he had been with for 20 years. And he was just kind of on the bench. And I said, hey, would you like to take a look at this executive summary I've got written for this business plan? And kind of noodle around, and he really liked it. And I said, you want to start, you know, chiseling away at it? And he said, yeah. And the business started, you know, really coming to life with us. We actually had a V1 that failed. It was, our kind of unique selling proposition is we're skincare systems for guys. And we really help guys, you know, have like a healthy skincare routine, wash your face, put a moisturizer on, you know, repeat at night, wash your face, put a nighttime moisturizer on, that basic concept. And he really liked it. So we started, you know, he started working on it, and Teach started doing very well for us. Teach One was a routine concept, but it was other people's products in the box. And it wasn't, we're a subscription company. So we kind of rethought the model and decided to put our own brand together, the Teach Hanley brand, not put other people's products in the box, and do it on a 30-day subscription. So that's kind of, you know, the pivot that we made. We relaunched 7 years ago, July, and under this current format. We just shipped our 2 millionth box a few weeks ago.
Congratulations.
Thank you. Very excited about that. We hand-delivered our 2 millionth box to a customer down in Georgia. Really very exciting. Myself and my other two founders went with us, with me. And got a chance to spend a few minutes with good old Blake, who, you know, is our 2 millionth customer. So that's how we got into the business. We really saw an opportunity through my global agency to help men think about skincare and skin health. I was getting a little older, and then we you know, put this thesis together, started working on it, failed, and then pivoted and relaunched.
Why do you think the version one failed? Two questions. Why do you think the version one failed? And question two, at first, did you start slowly adding your products to the subscription box, or did you go just all your products and made that transition quickly?
Yeah. First off, the first question is so damn good. I really wanted to jump on your comments earlier about like the importance of sales. I know it wasn't in context of a DTC business, it was generally speaking. When we're talking about my career in sales and your career, you know, having sales, it doesn't matter what business you're in. You're in the agency business, you know, I'm in the product business. Sales is the lifeblood of any company. So that, you know, the whole, you could have the best everything. And if you can't sell that concept, it's completely worthless. You could have like the best supply logistics, the best people, the best everything. If you can't sell it, it's pretty worthless. We didn't have a voice in the DTC marketplace, which again, I think we were talking about this earlier about your project, like having someone and having a voice. How do you get a voice in a crowded marketplace? So I think we didn't have that in V1. And we were, the other problem with that was we were also selling other people's products, which didn't make it unique, right? And they were very highly curated, but you could search and find them. They weren't easy to find, but you could find them. So there was really no reason. We didn't have a voice, and we weren't selling anything unique. That's the reason why we failed.
No, I love it. And then part two, did you jump right into all of your own, like, you know, private label brand, like your own private label products or whatever you want to call that? Or was it like a transition? I see a lot of companies that, you know, maybe they've got a store, you know, a store, and it's 70% other people's products so that they can get volume, and there's lower margin there, and they're trying to like build their brand like within the store.
That was actually part of the original thesis and in our Teach Hanley V1 that we would grow into more products and grow into our own brand. It didn't work because we didn't have a voice, but we just, for point of clarification, we developed our own formulas. We never went down the white label path. We developed our own formulas with our own chemist who's got a equity share in the business. And then we started sourcing manufacturers to manufacture our proprietary formulas. And to this day, every product we produce, we own the IP of the formulation.
I love that, protecting it.
Yeah. And, I mean, to very specifically answer your question, you know, we started with six products, which is actually kind of a lot out of the gate. We started with six products, three different systems. Those six products go in. And we started building, products. And our portfolio now is, while it's not huge, but it's pretty, pretty extensive, right? So we do, you know, body lotion, we do below the belt powder, we do bar soaps, do three different bar soaps, body washes, deodorant. And then we're really focused on the face. Like face is really where we're focused on.
It's where people probably notice the aging or, or the, you know, the care the most. I got a couple of questions for you before we do. Finding expert software developers doesn't have to be difficult, especially when you visit fullscale.io. We can build a software team quickly and affordably. Use the Fullscale platform to define your technical needs and then see what available developers, testers, and leaders are ready to join your team. Visit fullscale.io to learn more. The title is simplifying your company's message. Okay, so we're talking about selling, and I think this is just an interesting, I want to hear your take on this. It's kind of a broad question, but you know, what do you feel like, you didn't have the voice that you mentioned, but you haven't said that you got a voice either. And when you started trying to sell to men this skincare routine, like a system, I was part of Ballsy Brand's exit. I say part of it in regards to they hired me to launch them on Amazon and we grew Amazon well, and then they had an exit. You know, they were already doing well in their own D2C, and I loved their play and spin on the humor side of blow the belt stuff for men and just making it niche. Talk to me about your own experience with that, like finding a voice, like once you guys went to your own products. Just because you went to your own products doesn't mean you had a voice, right?
No.
And so
no relation.
If I know anything about launching skincare products on Amazon, Ballsy Brand was a win. There's been 8 or 9 failures for every Ballsy Brand I've had on Amazon. They're just very difficult to carve out market share. It's very difficult to get a voice, very difficult to convince people, especially men, you know, about your products. What was that messaging you guys got kind of came with? And did you find a voice early on?
Yeah, so we did get a voice early on. And what happened was I brought a partner who is talking on YouTube about male grooming. And we were going to work with him to produce paid content for us on his YouTube channel. But then we ended up striking a partnership agreement. This is the transition between our failed version and our revised current day version. We got the chemist and we started talking to a male grooming influencer who was really just talking about his people. It was a brilliant, much more brilliant than I even had any, you know, notion of at the time. It was very brilliant because he had a huge audience of guys that were listening to him about the things that we've been talking about how to take care of yourself. And there's a lot of exercise, right? And things like this, what to wear for the date and the, you know, the interview and the wedding and what to say and what not to say. So it was like a perfect fit for us. So that gave us a voice. When it came to message
and trust, right? Like I think that's huge, one of the biggest thing. Like I've really been pushing the influencer launch brands. Worked with Kevin Hart, Nikita Dragon, Bobby Parrish, some big ones, and launched brands with them, and saw the impact of that. You're just buying like what might take you years of reputation building or brand building, you know, by piggybacking with someone else that's already spent that time to build trust and brand and reputation. It's just an absolute win for brands. I'd be curious, like that move alone might have made version one successful. If that, you know, if they had been curated by him or something like that in that regard.
Yeah. I mean, so I'm speaking to my partner, Aaron Marino, and his channel's Alpha M. But I think like all the things you just described were all the intangible things that I didn't realize. Like I didn't realize the power of his network, the power of what he meant to the male grooming and fitness community at that time and still does. You know, and the credibility, and then specifically to your question, like the messaging, like his voice became our voice, like our voice at Tiege Hanley and what we said and talking about uncomplicated skincare for men and the terms that we would use really resonated or came out of the way Aaron spoke. Authenticity, you know, truthfulness, those type of things were all just hallmarks of Aaron.
What a great matchup.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, just thinking about your age into entrepreneurship at that time and thinking about where influencer or brand, like that kind of marketing was at that time, 8 years ago or, you know, 9 years ago, you guys were early.
We were really lucky. We've been lucky in many of ways. You know, that was one of them. I'm finding a chemist at that same time. We just tripped over him. I mean, literally, he was my business partner, Rob, and him were, you know, at some dinner event, and they kind of tangentially knew each other and was talking about skincare. I mean, it's just really fortuitous how all this came together for us. And, you know, and as you said earlier, I mean, it's just brutally hard. I mean, you know this, you talk to entrepreneurs every day. It's, you know, brutally hard. So I've been very lucky. We've been extremely fortunate. Nail messaging, have a voice in the marketplace, have a great product fit, produce good products that are really, you know, efficacious, you know, be talking about things that are relevant to guys. Those things have all been a huge part of our success.
I think, pairing yourself up with someone that already had trust, that had a message, like you talked about authenticity and trust and, yeah, you know, morality, and, made it much easier to choose what your messaging was as a brand as well.
Yeah. I also got lucky too, cause he's a good human being. He really does mean what he says. Which is the reason why he has, you know, whatever it is, I don't even know, 7 million followers on YouTube or something like that, because he is authentic, you know, and he is truthful and trustworthy. So, you know, and I think that was really important for our business. We really needed that to be part of our culture and to be part of our messaging.
I love that. And I think it's brilliant. You know, I've had the opposite happen as well, trying to build a brand with an influencer that had a massive following, and it just goes sideways. And so yeah. I've built my reputation, you know, 10 years now as an entrepreneur, but I spent a lifetime building my reputation and brand as a person. And, you know, just, I couldn't cut ties fast enough. You know, we were finding success, but it was just something that I didn't want to be aligned with. I didn't like the way that he was presenting himself to the world and tied to me in that yeah. way. And so, I can call it luck, but you know, it's also fortuitous. You know, I think, it's planning, it's opportunity, you know, it's swinging and knowing how to judge good people and who to make partnerships with and those kinds of things. But for anyone listening out there that's looking to build a brand, probably one of the most successful things you can do is try to find somebody that already has a voice, or else if you don't have that voice, I would suggest try building a community around a topic first. Like if it's men's skincare, get some meetups going, try to get some content going, getting people following and signing up and starting to create this little community where the community becomes the voice itself instead of like a leader in that regard. It can just be hosting the events, having meetups. You know, there's so many people that are interested in different stuff, dog training, if you're doing some dog products, or, you know, ways of being healthy and creating these like fitness groups or whatever the case might be, and creating that community and then trying to launch a product through that. You know, you're going to stand a lot higher chance or a lot higher chance of success. I think than just trying to go out there, especially in a category like skincare, and just say, hey, we're here and we're great and we created a great formula and we want you to try it. I don't want to get stuck on that too much, but it's just, I mean, it absolutely seems like to be the winning formula these days.
Yeah. And there's a lot of people that have taken that path and been very successful. I couldn't agree with you more. And one term that we use around here is like hard yards, and meaning, which is a rugby term. We had some New Zealand guys working with us, and you know, the point of the term is that it just, you know, it takes a lot of effort. And so that is, I completely agree with you, Andrew. I mean, building yourself, building your reputation and developing a level of expertise around a subject that you're really interested in before you launch a business is brilliant. But it's hard yards. And no matter what you do, it's going to be hard yards, no matter how you approach it.
When it comes to entrepreneurship and brand building, if it's easy, it's probably not the right thing to be doing. So no. I think hard is the only way when it comes to brand building and entrepreneurship and reputation. No one gets a reputation by doing easy things, whether you're a brand or a person. I just don't think that's the way that it is. Not saying you have to do everything the hard way, but just the work that it requires to really carve something out, I think that's sustainable is the hard yards for sure. Okay, as we come up on time,
yeah,
I want to ask you two last questions. One being, what's something that the brand's working on that you're excited about, something new coming up? And then question two, something that you're working on or you're excited about, just as Kelly, as a person, not the business, to wrap up the show.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, so our R&D roadmap is almost like 2 years in the making. So the things that we're working on, you know, in 2023 will be, you know, we're working on Q4 now. We'll come out like late 24 into 25. We just launched on Tuesday. So we're on September 28th, if I can say that, if you don't mind, on this show today. We just launched a couple of days ago a retinol stick, which is retinol is a product that has profound impact on your skin. Like it's kind of like the go-to product for any issues. It can be from an acne standpoint. It can be from anti-aging. It can be from, you know, having very spotty pigmentation issues in your skin. And retinol is a great product. We just launched, and it's the first of any brand in the men's space, a stick format of retinol. It is awesome. And I'm very excited about that. We've got another similar launch next year, which is going to be super premium, really innovative product. So I'm very, very excited about that. We're working on, you know, our acne line as well. We're reformulating that. So a lot of great things on the product development standpoint. Personal standpoint, it's really interesting you asked this question. I'm like kind of thinking about three things in my life. And the three things that I'm really thinking about are, you know, making sure that I've had a good family, like that my kids are giving them 150%, my marriage, I've given 150%, and that I'm doing my best to contribute to society by putting good people in society. Bucket one. Bucket two is, you know, career-wise, getting to a certain level of, you know, financial independence and having a company that is successful and will live on beyond me and potentially, you know, it was a lucrative, you know, life-changing event for me at some point. So that's kind of two. And I'm kind of close to where that is for me. So now I'm thinking about like the next and last like 20 to 30 years of my life. And I've really been thinking about, and I was really thinking about business because I have all these incredible business ideas. I actually have some patents that are wonderful that I'm not using. So there's all this stuff that's going on in my mind about business. And I was, for the last 5 years, I was thinking about the next thing I'm going to do. And I've actually rethinking that. And I, while I'll do some projects, I really want to think about how much good I can do in the next 20 years, assuming that I reach a certain level of financial freedom that I hope to. And then, so what does that look like? And I want to think about it now because I want to make the biggest impact I can. And so I like, what exactly is that? I want to be really focused on something. So that's kind of what I'm thinking about right now.
I love that answer. I've kind of coined where I'm at currently as the legacy chapter, you know, and really thinking about legacy and just thinking about, you know, what that looks like for me and my family. You know, we all have our own version of that, I think. And it's not just what we do while we're here, you know, but what impact do we leave? And I think as a business person, it can be so easy to just think about business, 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 because that's where we get a lot of our validation. It's where we get, you know, anyone even knowing I exist sometimes is probably just from the business. You know, some of these things that at the end of the day, if all that's removed, it doesn't make you feel one way or another, right?
Right.
About, you know, what you've left. So I love those answers, Kelly. Thank you again for being on the show and sharing your story with us. And
thank you.
If anyone's needing skincare, we all do. So they need to look you up. Where can people come in contact with you, follow along on your story, connect
with
you on LinkedIn?
Yeah, I mean, you know, follow me or connect with me on LinkedIn. I really do like to connect with people there. I do put some weekly information on LinkedIn that I think is helpful for careers. If you want to try our product, we have great product and there's a lot of great companies out there. Kiehl's, for instance, is a great company. I strongly suggest you have a healthy skincare routine. Protect your skin with an moisturizer with SPF, regardless if it's ours or someone else's. It is really important. You can go to teach.com, /startup, the startup hustle. And we've got like a really sweet deal for you there. I think our best deal ever is on that landing page.
Amazing.
teach.com/startup hustle. But you know, get yourself a healthy skincare routine, and you'll appreciate it today and 15 years from now.
As a redhead that grew up in Africa, I can very much confirm that having an SPF in your life is a must. Yeah, it's something that I would be, you know, it was more visible where like the sun could literally put me in the hospital, versus for a lot of other people, it's something that takes a lot longer before any kind of like, you know, effects are seen or damage is done. You know, it's not something you see every single day. So, you know, in the day we're living in, it's just something very, very important to protect your skin, yeah. At least. Thanks again for being on the show, Kelly. And thanks again to our sponsor, Fullscale.io. They have the people in the platform to help you build and manage a team of experts if you're looking for software engineers, testers, or leaders. When you visit Fullscale.io, all you need to do is answer a few questions, let the platform match you up with fully vetted, high-experienced team of software engineers, testers, and leaders at Fullscale. They specialize in building long-term teams that work only for you. Learn more when you visit Fullscale.io. Kelly, thanks for being on the show. And Hustlers, thanks again for tuning in. We'll see you next time.
Startup Hustle is brought to you by Fullscale.io, helping you build a software team quickly and affordably. Make sure you reach down and hit that subscribe button, then come find us on Instagram. See you next time. We do it.